Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, senior editor at Billboard and Broadway fan extraordinaire here. So if you're already a musical theater fan, I really just need to open this episode by telling you that my guest is Sutton Foster. Hopefully that's enough to convince you to listen. But for those of you who aren't as well acquainted with Broadway's favorite triple threat performer, or maybe at this point you mainly know her from television, from her thoroughly winning roles on Bunheads or on Younger, I'll give you a rundown of why everyone loves Sutton Foster so much. Her career is a bit of a Broadway dream come true, starting with when she was quite literally plucked from the ensemble of the show Thoroughly Modern Millie to become its star in 2002, ultimately winning the Leading Actress Tony Award for that year for her debut. It quickly became apparent after that that she was the rare kind of star who could really do anything on Broadway. She's a fantastic dancer, completely endearing as an actress, and has had quite an impressive voice, as anyone who's heard her knows as well. Her career on Broadway since then has been really varied, ranging from playing Princess Fiona in Shrek to Jo March in Little Women, Janet Vandegraaff in The Drowsy Chaperone, Rena Sweeney in Anything Goes, for which she won her second Tony, and the title character in the newer musical Violet. Thanks to the fact that Younger is now so beloved, it's in its fifth season. It has sadly been a little bit of time since we've seen Sutton on Broadway, but anyone who loves hearing her sing will be happy to know that she has a new album that was just recently released called Take Me to the World. It's definitely not your typical solo Broadway star showcase. It is not just a cabaret show on tape. For one thing, it prominently features student musicians from the Ball State University Theater and Dance Department, where Sutton has taught for years now. And the mix of songs on the album highlights what a supporter of new work and living theater composers Sutton has been for a while now, with tracks by Stephen Sondheim, Janine Tesori, Jason Robert Brown, and Shayna Taub, among others. So clearly, there was a lot for us to talk about when she came by the podcast recently. So without further ado, here is my recent chat with Sutton Foster.
I'll give you stars and the moon and a soul to guide you and a promise I'll never go. I'll give you hope to bring out all the life inside you and the strength that will help you grow.
Hello, Sutton.
Hi.
I feel like I need to sing like Sutton Foster. You need a musical introduction. Well, excited to see you here. I have to say, first of all, that I'm one of the people who, in addition to having seen you in musicals over the years, is also a crazy Bunheads fan.
So oh, thanks.
You will always be endeared to my heart for Bunheads.
Thank you. I love Bunheads. It was the short-lived love of my life.
Yeah. I kind of wonder like how many people who recognize you or come up to you on the street are crazy Bunheads fans.
There's a lot of Bunheads fans out there. I was like, where were you? Where was the noise when we needed you? I know. But no, it's been so cool. And it's and now it lives on. You know, I think it's on Hulu. And so many people are like watching it now for the first time. And I it was such a special show. And it was so cool to be on a show that was very well loved.
It was, I indeed watched the entire thing for a second time on Hulu. So
it's good. I need to do that. I haven't done that yet.
It's an excellent way to while away like 8 hours of your life on a rainy day, for sure.
Okay.
talking about the album seemed like a good moment to me to kind of dial back and reflect, because I see some reflection on the album of your like beginnings with Millie, some people who have kind of been in your musical life for many, many years now. So if we could start by rewinding back to that first big moment for you, are there ways that you still see things that you've learned from Millie reflected in your career and the work that you're doing now? Or is it more like people who have kind of stuck with you, like Janine Tesori?
Yeah.
I'm curious, like 16 years later, if you still have moments where you're like, oh, I learned that doing that show.
Millie was a life-changing, career-changing moment for me in my life. And there are people that I met on that show that I still work with, Janine Tesori, who I've now worked with several times, Michael Rafter, who was our music director on Millie and conductor, is my music director to this date. You know, he's responsible for all of the arrangements on the new album. He's like a true collaborator. You know, when you meet someone who makes you better, you know, I feel like working with him and Janine too as well. It's like, you just sort of, we all sort of met in our youth and our beginnings, and then we've like we've grown up together. But Millie taught me a lot of things. It taught me how to be how to do 8 shows a week, how to have endurance and stamina, how to be a leader of a company. I'd never done that before, in that capacity. How to deal with criticism. How to stop reading reviews and stop reading the comments. Stay off of message boards.
I was going to say, was it message boards back
then?
Was it comments
boards
yet?
Yeah, it was all like, you know, like social media. I mean, now it's changed since then, but you know, it was just sort of the beginning of when people started sharing their opinions online, and it was available for any and everyone to read. And so I feel like, and also I will say, one of the things that I learned from doing Millie is that it helped me find a better balance in my life, because I think back then in my 20s, and I was 27 when it opened, I turned 27 right before we opened, I think I had, as far as the scale of life, I had many more coins in the career column than the relationships and personal life, and that has definitely balanced out as I've gotten older. So Millie taught me a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it seems like it's kind of a rare thing that a first project can be kind of like defining, but in a good way. And I feel like that sort of established you as a triple threat, and there, it doesn't seem like there would have been any downside to that. Did you, after that show, did you feel like you needed to prove yourself in other ways, or did it just pretty much set a good path going forward for you?
I mean, I have a different perspective on it now, having many years of time pass. But Millie was like the best thing that had ever happened to me, but also like the worst thing that had ever happened to me, because it like just tore me apart. It like broke me apart. Mm-hmm. It was debilitating and hard, and where I should have been like on the top of the world, I felt this enormous pressure to deliver, and when I couldn't, it was, you know, debilitating. But there is like this thing, like you've achieved something, and how do you have staying power? What do you do next? You know, how do you continue to, I don't know, challenge yourself as an artist, but also stay relevant in like the theater scene, or so it's it was an interesting. The next project I did after Millie was Little Women, which was again another just like sort of juggernaut role that wasn't as successful as Millie, but and then that sort of taught me like, all right, I can't keep trying to sort of top myself in this direction. I need to like make a left turn and do something different. And that was what brought on Drowsy Chaperone.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was like very pointed that I wanted to do something that was more ensemble, about being part of an ensemble of people, as opposed to me being in the front because mm-hmm. I couldn't handle that. I didn't know how. It was like breaking me apart. So it seems so silly, you know. But I have a different. I can have reflection on it now. But drowsy was a very was a gift because it like. I was sharing the responsibility with all of these incredible people, and it was like this magical little show that made me sort of fall in love with it all again.
And I feel like that's something that we see on the album that I want to get into too, that it's like, I feel like it's very rare to see a solo album like this that feels like really collaborative.
Yeah.
And like you, I mean, you are the main person on the album, but there are other voices that mm-hmm. are prominent. And
it was really important to me that the album feel like a collaboration. And I yes, it is my name on the front, but it's there's so many amazing people that went into building the album, and I wanted to share. There's many duets. I have a group number with incredible singers from Ball, because it was a collaboration with Ball State University. I'm an adjunct faculty there, and we wanted to record it there, and it was awesome. We used their recording studios, we used their orchestra, we used over 100 students and faculty, we used the senior musical theater class of 2018, as well as the teachers, the voice teachers. So it was this wonder, and their entire art and design department designed the album. They did all of the packaging, everything. So it was like incredible to be able to sort of give back and also use all of these young minds to sort of like redefine what this album was going to be.
So I didn't realize until I was reading about the album how long teaching has been kind of part of your life as well. And
yeah.
I mean, really going back to when you were kind of starting out. So I was curious about how that came into your life and what it is like to be teaching young people as your own career is still like
yeah.
really developing.
I feel like I had a really wonderful relationship with my high school drama teacher, Mr. Bodick, Mr. Rick Bodick. I still call him Mr. Bodick, but he he was just incredibly influential. And like, because I didn't know that theater, or let alone musical theater, you could make a career out of it. For me, it was just something you did for fun, you know. It was like mm-hmm. a hobby. Or and he was really like someone who like just introduced me to so much, and has always been a champion and has always encouraged me still to this day. And I always felt really passionate about wanting to give back in some way, because I grew up in a tiny I grew up in Georgia, and small towns in Georgia, and then moved to suburbs of Michigan. New York was like, I had no concept of New York. I did a paper on it, you know, when I was like a freshman. And and that was before, you know, the internet. So now I feel like things are more accessible, you know. But back then we went to the library. We would like check out like cast recordings, and we'd watch the Tony Awards. That was like the only outlet I had.
Mm-hmm.
So I started like early, but even before I moved to New York, I volunteered at a local community theater when I was living in Memphis, because I dropped out of college and I was completely lost. And I was like, what do I do? And I was like, I'm going to volunteer at this community theater and like working with young people. And then I just felt super passionate about it. And whenever we would do and my affiliation with Ball State, they had just reached out to me for like a talk back to talk to their students. I think when I was doing Drowsy Chaperone, and I was like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, and I just sort of fell in love with their students and their faculty. And there was a real Midwest sensibility and earnestness. And it just felt like the right fit for me. And it was a program that was redefining itself. And it was kind of like on the verge of sort of bubbling and growing. And it's been incredible. And I now like I teach a cabaret class every year via like Skype, and mm-hmm. And then we do a they do a
Skype
show,
cabaret
a like Skype cabaret. they like and then they do a performance in Indianapolis, and then in March they do a performance at Joe's Pub here in New York. And so it's like really cool. And we've done, and Michael Rafter actually, and I teach it together. And so it just felt fitting that we would incorporate them, you know, with the album. And we've just developed this wonderful relationship with the school. And it feels like it's so important to me. And it's also like really important to me to be able to share as my career has evolved and changed now being in television. And I feel like I have, oh my gosh, I learned this today. I can like share it with this.
And tell someone else.
Yeah, share it with this like next generation, you know. And sort of share my experiences and how, like, you don't have to, you can work really hard and you can kind of keep challenging yourself and you can, I'm from the Midwest too, you know, it's like, you don't have to be an asshole to kind of succeed and how to like.
Worthy lesson.
Yeah. You know, like you can like work really hard and things can work out. Yeah.
And you've directed there too, a couple of shows.
I've co-directed, right? Yeah. Okay. So Bill Jenkins is the chair of the department, and he's just been my like champion there. And so they did Drowsy Chaperone and they did Shrek the Musical, and I was able to come in and sort of help with casting and sort of give some insight into, you know, my experience of what it was like doing it on Broadway and sort of share some character development and help them with their productions.
That makes sense. I was wondering if like secretly you were like directing your own Sweeney Todd or something.
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing. But a lot of it is because I'm so busy, which is incredible. I'm Bill has been able to like I've been able to come in for like little snippets of time to kind of come in and sort of dance around and flit off some pearls of wisdom or something. In I'll say 2025, Sutton Foster's production of Sweeney Todd.
The world is waiting. It sounds amazing. Well, I think that one thing that really popped out to me about the album, which I hadn't really, I guess, thought about looking at your body of work before, is like how many living composers you've been able to work with and who you're championing. And I want to talk about Janine first and Michael as well. What do you think was kind of the foundation of that relationship starting, and what kind of made the two of you click as a partnership that has kind of continued through the years since then?
I think she's a genius.
Fair statement. Fair statement.
I love being in a room with her. She elevates everyone around her. She's an incredible collaborator. She is so willing to say, okay, look, no, that doesn't work, or let's do it, let's try this, or blah, 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 you know, like, what do you think? Or, I just think she's a total badass. Like, I would follow her anywhere, and if she calls and asks me to do anything, I would do it in a heartbeat without asking what it was. The other person I can put in that category is Amy Sherman-Palladino and Lee Silverman, who I've worked with now as a director several times. They're just women they're strong, powerful women who make everyone better. And I just love, they all make me better. And I feel like I just don't want to let, I never want to let Janine down. You know, I've loved working with her. We did Millie, we did Shrek, and we did Violet. And she's just the best. I hope that I get to work with her again and again.
And it's a real like variety of things that she's done too. I mean, do you see kind of a through line about like what makes her music so great to you to perform?
It's like we share a voice, I guess. It's like it seems really weird to say, but it's like we like know each other. It's the secret. It's that secret thing, you know. It's like that chemistry thing, you know. It's like it's hard to define, because you can work with people and you're like, oh, we're not on the same page, or it doesn't fit, or I can sing someone's music and I'm like, oh, geez, this doesn't work. But there's something about Janine, like the minute I start to learn a song of hers, it's as if it was written for me, which there have been songs that have been written for me, but mm-hmm. it's like she just like, we like understand each other.
I was going to say at this point, like I would think she is writing to your voice almost since you've worked together so much.
Yeah. It's like, it's one of those amazing things. And I feel that way about Michael Rafter too. It's like, you hope that a lot of people work, solo, you know, a lot of people work on their own or, you know, I find, especially in creativity or anything creative or art, the arts, it's like collaboration is the key, you know, and you hope that you find a collaborator who by working together, you actually make each other better because you're better together than you are on your own. And I feel that way about Michael Rafter. It's like we come together and we both are better. And it's like, I can't, there's no one else that I could sing with than him.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So was he and or Janine instrumental in kind of coming up with the concept for the album in the first place? Was that a conversation or more something that came purely from you?
Michael and I, we do lots of concerts, and the very first concert we did was an American Songbook for Lincoln Center back in 2004, right after I left Millie. It was the first time I'd ever done something like that, where you're like, you know, it's like the cabaret art form, or the, I always call it a concert, because I'm like, because somehow the word cabaret can have like lots of feelings. Lots of feelings.
Sitting on a piano with a glass of wine.
So I'm like, we do concerts. But and then we did an album in 2008, I guess. That was really derived. I was going through a divorce, and Michael had gone through some health issues, and we were both. That album was my first album, which was called Wish, and it was really like this album of healing for both of us. We just kind of kept doing concerts, and like we could have a tour shirt that would have like, you know, lots of cities on. We just all over the country, the world. We started doing symphony stuff, and we knew we wanted to do another album, but we didn't feel like we had it, like whatever the album was going to be. And then my husband and I adopted a baby girl, and suddenly the songs that we were looking at and the music that we were being, that we were drawn to started to shift, because I had this new life in my life, and I was suddenly a mom, and like, so the album started to take place. Mm-hmm. So that was really what formed the album, was the birth of Emily, my daughter.
The only thing that I'm missing, which I've never seen one of your solo shows, but I feel like I've heard so much about you singing Mabel this time to your dog, that I'm a little sad that's not on the album.
That didn't make the cut. I know poor Mabel's having a hard time. Mabel's my dog, and so she was the first, and then we got Brody, our another dog, and then she was like, why have you done this? And then we brought a human child, and now she's just...
herself.
Yeah, she's really having a hard time. So I should have put Mabel this time on the album for her.
At least she gets to be serenaded.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, I was going to say that this does not just feel like cabaret on tape. Going back to the collaborative aspect of it, did you initially have all of the students in the room with you, or would you start out working on things by yourself, or was it always sort of being in the room with them?
For the album?
Yeah.
We had put together for, so what's interesting is like, so the final track on the album is Every Time We Say Goodbye, which is a Cole Porter song. We had been commissioned by the Cincinnati Pops to do four new arrangements of Cole Porter. This was 2 years ago. And so we, for the cabaret class at Ball State, we decided to focus on Cole Porter. And one of the songs that they sang at the end of their class, at the end of their show that they did, was Every Time We Say Goodbye, arranged by Michael Rafter, this beautiful a cappella version. And then when we sang, we had them sing it with the Cincinnati Pops with full orchestra coming in. And I knew I wanted to include that on the album. Now, the label was like, but you're not singing on it. It's just the students. And I said, but that's what the whole album is about. The whole album is about collaboration and about the future, you know, about this is the future. This is the next generation, you know. It was like a gift for them. It was like, this is the whole point. And then the On My Way, I'm On My Way, On My Way, was actually written for six singers. And we did it at I did a concert at Lincoln Center in April of 17, right after Emily was born, and six moms sang it. And I knew, oh, I want to do this on the album. And two of the moms were Darcy Roberts and Megan McGinnis, who I do duets with on the album. And then we decided that the other voices would be, the three other voices soloed are the faculty voice teachers at Ball State, and then the chorus are the musical theater seniors and alumni at Ball State. So it was all done very the piece had already been created, and then we decided to open it up and include everybody.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go through some of my favorite tracks on the album because they made me want to hear more from you with these people. First was Jason Robert Brown, who I was like, now she needs to do a Jason Robert Brown show. He will be a podcast guest, actually, a little later in the summer. So what is your history with him? And this song, Stars and the Moon, is just, to me, such a classic JRB kind of song. Tell me about how you kind of decided to do that song and what you knew of him before.
I had always been a fan of his. When I was a kid growing up, I was obsessed with Songs for a New World. So I used to listen to it, you know, in my room. And I actually decided to sing it for the first time when I did a concert with Janine Tesori. This was at City Center like 2 years ago with Jonathan Groff. Jonathan Groff and I did this one night only concert at City Center, and we got to sing songs we've always
tragic to have missed them,
oh,
by the way.
It was pretty awesome. And so we got to sing songs that like we've never sung before. So I didn't want to, so I was like, I've always wanted to sing Stars and the Moon. And then as soon as I sang it, I was like, oh my gosh, I finally get this song. Like, you have to be of a certain age, I think, to like really understand it. And like, as a kid, I never really got it. And then you're like, oh, you have to have like some life experience to realize what it means. And then I just started doing it in concerts. When I would work with Rafter, and I was like, I gotta sing this. And then, It All Fades Away, the other Jason Robert Brown song, a student at Ball State, my brother was in the show. Like, my brother had done the show, on Broadway. But a student at Ball State sang It All Fades Away in a music class, and I was listening to it, and I went, oh gosh, that's a really great song. And I said to Michael, I said, because I had been talking to Jason Robert Brown because we're friends, and I told him that I was working on an album, and I said, do you have any trunk songs or any like things that haven't been recorded, or you know? And he was sort of sending me ideas, and he sent me another song from Bridges. And I was like, what about It All Fades Away? And we started working on that. And then it became like, it's like one of my favorite things I've ever done.
So were you actually working with him when you were?
With Jason?
Yeah.
No. And I was, I did it all with Michael.
Okay.
And then, and I just was praying that Jason would give us his blessing. And then I did a concert with Jason, just like a one night only, because he has a residency at Subculture here in New York.
Yes.
And I got to sing. I sang Stars in the Moon, It All Fades Away, and then three of his other songs that I learned for that night. But I got to sing them with him. And that was wild. I was like, what is my life? Like, this is so
really
cool
accompanist.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty wild.
Yeah, no, I love those. Also, having recently gone to see 12th Night, Shayna Taub is amazing. Another former podcast guest. And love the song Room that you chose. I mean, that and the Jason songs they're like really sort of huge journeys like within a song, and they're kind of about like going through stuff in life, it seems to me.
Yeah.
But what is your connection to Shayna?
So Shayna and I met... This is a wild. So, I taught. This is such a. I taught two semesters at NYU, and I ended up doing. I did two sort of cabaret class. That was before I started working at Ball State. So I did two sort of cabaret classes at NYU, and then I did. I taught the freshmen. I can't remember what year. I did a vocal performance. So I ended up teaching like 60 freshmen, a lot of which are now like on Broadway and doing really well, all because of me. No, I did nothing. But they, actually, Jelani's in Frozen. He was one of my students. And Ariel Satchel, who just won the Tony for Band's Visit, he was one of my students.
Oh my God.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. I know. I'm like, wow. Anyway, oddly, and crazily enough, the pianist for the for this class, for the vocal performance classes, was Shayna Taub. And I had no idea. I was like, why were you playing piano? She's like, I just wanted to brush up on my like sight reading. And she's like, I just wanted to be in the room. And I was like, what? Like, why would you ever do that? I had no idea that she was such a brilliant composer. And so then Room came across my plate. I think I reached out to her again, like as I was like sort of looking for material, and she either sent me Room or someone sent it to me, and I just fell in love with it. I thought it was so beautiful, and I sang it that concert where I sang Stars in the Moon with Jonathan Groff. I sang Room, and Shayna actually was part of that concert. She because the concert was a mix of like Jonathan and I singing stuff, and then a bunch of young new composers, and she was one of the new composers sort of doing her material. And I just fell in love with it and knew I wanted to do it on the album.
I feel like Shayna is always popping up in places you don't expect her, like
which is so awesome. I just will never forget. I was like, why are you playing piano in like freshman vocal performance class?
Yes.
She was just like the coolest. She's just the coolest.
I feel like she is kind of like the cool piano playing singer songwriter girl who like I kind of wish I was.
Yeah, right.
Also very exciting to see you singing Sondheim.
I
sort of wonder, like, is there a Sondheim show that you would want to do in the near future? Oh, like, God. What is your Sondheim wish list?
I did a one of my favorite things I've ever done was Anyone Can Whistle. We did it at City Center Encores back in 2010. Excuse me, burping. sorry. And it was just incredible, like, to work on his music. And he was in the room, and I was, like, frozen. I was, like, I lost the ability to speak. I mean, I would love to do a Sondheim show someday. That would be a dream. Sweeney Todd, maybe, someday. It's like my favorite show ever.
Who would you be in Sweeney Todd?
Well, eventually Mrs. Lovett.
Yes.
Right? We got to, maybe in a couple years.
Your time is coming.
And my time is coming.
To break out your Cockney. and there is some pop on the album, some James Taylor and Simon and Garfunkel. And I was curious what your kind of personal history and relationship to pop music is. I kind of think of you as someone who must have like come out of the womb tap dancing, but
I know, right? Well, see, but I also grew up in the 70s, right? Mm. So like my mom used to listen to, I always joke about the 8-tracks, and she used to listen to John Denver and James Taylor and Dan Vogelberg. And, you know, I grew up like Carole King and Simon and Garfunkel, and like I grew up listening to all this stuff, and like I love folk. Like if I'm every people always ask like what do I listen to? Either nothing, like just silence, which is awesome, or like today's hits. Like I listen to like the pop, the like today's pop, which I couldn't tell you who sings what, but I like will bop along, you know. It's like anything, or I'll listen to like folk or something that's like super chill.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like James Taylor is one of my favorites, and I would love to do a whole James Taylor album, or John Denver too.
No, it's I like the James Taylor arrangement a lot. It's like a little different from the way I'm used to hearing that song. But it occurs to me that this is like the kind of music that adults can enjoy, but also like play around a baby and like everything is chill and calm.
I mean, the album is definitely eclectic, but it's a culmination of many, many years. Like it's evolved. We didn't want to just, and we over-recorded it. I mean, there are three songs that we recorded that we didn't include. Like we really, everything was very thoughtfully selected, and has taken like years and years to sort of come to where I am right now in 2018, you know, as an artist, as a person. So it's cool. It's like this little time capsule. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a perfect segue, because I was going to say that the last show I saw you in was Sweet Charity, which was Amaz, that felt kind of like a turning point for you in a way to me. I'm not 100% sure why, but maybe because it's a bit of a darker role. It had that kind of minimalist production.
Yeah.
It was a different context than I'm used to seeing you in.
Yeah.
So I was curious if I was right about that in terms of what it was like for you professionally, and going forward from here, like what are the kinds of roles that you want to be doing and that you're interested in?
That's interesting. It was a very specific, incredible thing, like that show, and it was exactly what I wanted it to be. Like it was just, I wanted to play that role in a whole new way, and it was just to be able to perform that close to an audience too was terrifying. It was like, it was literally, people were a foot away from me. It was awesome. I think as I'm moving forward, I've loved doing younger. I've loved being on TV. That's been like a wonderful thing for me. I just want to work with good people. I want to be challenged. I want to be. I'm interested in the left turns. I'm interested in the where people go, huh? Or like, that wasn't what I was expecting, or that's not what I thought, or like, that's interesting to me, because I can't keep, like, after I did Anything Goes on Broadway, I was like, how do I keep going this direction? It's like impossible, because that was like, how can you? In my mind, I was like, I don't know how to top that. So I did Violet, which was like a totally left. And then I did Sweet Charity. So it's like, whoa, like what? That's interesting to me. Like I feel like I want to keep going in new directions every time. I know that can't always be the case, but that's what I would like to do.
Has doing younger made you sort of hungry for doing more musical theater in certain ways? Or are you happy with the TV track for now? Because you are surrounded by so many theater people on the show that I'm like, I know all the theater people are always like, why can't there be a musical episode of Younger?
I know. I feel like where I am now in my life, I feel like Younger came at a really great time. I was starting to experience some burnout performing live. And Younger just sort of was this whole new thing, like a whole new even though it's simple, you know, you're playing a character, you're telling a story, it's like you're acting, but it's like a whole new, being on television and being on a set is completely different than doing theater. So it was like this whole new thing that I got to learn, and that was just a wonderful opportunity. But I would absolutely love to do another show if it's the right thing and it feels right. I've got like irons in the fire and some things that are exciting, but I really want it to feel like something that will be challenging and exciting.
Well, I was going to say, there must be offers occasionally for you to come back here, because you're definitely missed.
And everyone's like, you've left Broadway for television. I was like, wait, no. Hopefully Broadway will always be here.
Yeah. Like, I feel like Sweet Charity was just like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... I believe that you will be back soon.
Okay.
I choose to believe.
Okay.
Well, thank you for coming. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Yay.
So close your eyes. You can close your eyes. It's all right.
Sutton Foster's album Take Me to the World is out now. You can find it wherever you choose to buy your music. As always, if you're a fan of the Billboard on Broadway podcast, please give us lots of likes and nice reviews on iTunes, although now the podcast is on many more new platforms. Besides iTunes and Acast, which we've always been on, we're on Google Play, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Podbean, Stitcher, and TuneIn. So there is truly no excuse for you not to be listening to Billboard on Broadway. If you would like to tweet about the podcast, use the hashtag Billboard on Broadway. I am at Rebecca Milzoff, and on Instagram, you down with RMM. And hope to have you back next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.